The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening. Continuing in our parenting series, just a couple of more points and then maybe an additional focus. It's very important to work in tandem with our children's schools and teachers to ensure that they're getting everything that they need. Parents, more than anyone else, have to view themselves as the main caseworker. Ultimately, a teacher is responsible. One teacher told me today, called me from Los Angeles, told me he's responsible for 90 students, I guess, in different classes. The average teacher may be responsible for 30 or 35 students. a principal is responsible for hundreds of students. Most of our families are not of the size of a class. And therefore, it behooves us as parents to be the ones who are on top of making sure that all of the needs and all of the issues in the lives and the education of our children are being taken care of. And when we notice something that might be amiss at school, in the yeshiva, it behooves us to make sure that we check up, we look into it. Now, how we deal with this and how we look into it is very important. If we have a negative or belligerent attitude, if we tend automatically to assume that the school or the teacher is at fault, and we express these attitudes, especially if we express these attitudes to our children, we're probably dooming the whole partnership between home and parent and maybe even the education of our child to failure. So it certainly has to be a positive effort. But it means forging positive relationships with the rebbeim, with the teachers, with the school. Parent-teacher conferences are sacrosanct. They must be attended. A child has a very clear message when the parent doesn't have time, or both parents, for the most part, don't have time for a parent-teacher conference that says something to them about their importance and the importance of their education. It also says something to the teacher and the school, the parent's active involvement. A parent should not be a nudge. A parent should not call the teacher every day for an up-to-date daily report, nor call the school or the office. But reasonable, that depends on the school, the situation, the nature of the problem, contact with a teacher and the administration, even between the parent-teacher conferences, is extremely significant and important. It allows us to get a broader picture of how our children are doing, and it allows us to deal with problems before they fester and get out of control. Now, we know that not every child is the same. In fact, every child is different, and therefore, different children have different needs and different approaches must be taken. Sometimes teachers are not fully aware of the unique needs of an individual student, and this has to be communicated by the parent. If there are such individual and unique needs, they should be communicated early on rather than waiting for a parent-teacher's conference, which usually takes place a couple of months down the road, maybe the first report card or something like that. And at that time already, many mistakes may have been made, many oversights may have taken place, and the specific needs of this individual child may not have been met. So that type of communication, awareness, feedback, consultation, putting their heads together, maybe the principal, the teacher, and the parent, when there's a problem and strategizing what's the best way to deal with it. When done respectfully, when done without any blame, without any recriminations, when done in good faith and sincerity and caring, is most likely to be very successful and certainly very, very significant for the well-being and proper education of our child. There will be times when we don't seem to be getting satisfaction in dealing with the teacher, and those create real problems because going behind the teacher's back to the administration oftentimes has negative repercussions. Neglecting it and leaving it alone also has negative repercussions, and sometimes we just have to first work with the teacher trying to hammer something out, and if we're not successful, maybe try again and maybe even a third time before we take any more drastic steps. But ultimately, we do have to view ourselves as the guardians, the parents, the guardians and the caseworkers, the ones in charge of the welfare of our children, ultimately even in school, and therefore we cannot overlook the problems that they see. When we feel that a child is being mistreated, we oftentimes have to take more serious action, not just their problems are not being understood, but actually being mistreated. Certainly any serious issues of inappropriate activity or behavior or attitude and conduct have to be reported appropriately, hopefully to a receptive administration. But we have to be very careful about these things because we don't want to jeopardize the relationship between our children and their teachers. On the other hand, we don't want to allow problems to remain and fester and just get more serious and oftentimes causing long range and even permanent damage. Sometimes what cannot be accomplished in the classroom or even in the home can be accomplished with a qualified and I would say specially trained mentor. The concept of a mentor, meaning a young adult, a couple years senior, older than the student, young man, young woman, who is of the right hashkofa, the right values, the right midos, sincere, caring, loving, dedicated, committed, hopefully, or preferably very insightful, can go a long way because our children tend to relate best and feel validated the most by young, but a little bit older than them, adult mentors that take an interest in their lives. And this sometimes, when we find that the teacher in the home cannot get the problem under hand, and it's not something that requires maybe professional help, this is something that we can sometimes help through the use of such a mentor. Just one more point before going on to something else, and that is that one of the signs of success of our program, of our yeshiva program, is really one of the pitfalls of the program as well. In fact, in many ways, one could say that our problems are really a product of our successes. And the success that has been achieved in intensity of learning, in seriousness of learning, in vastness of curriculum, in extension of hours and length of classes and school day and so forth, carries with it a price tag. And that price tag, I guess, can be referred to as pressure. And sometimes too much pressure on a kid is overwhelming, and kids tend to internalize pressure. They don't tend to speak it out and to express it and to share it with others to reduce it. In fact, for the most part, they're probably not even aware of the fact that they're under such pressure, and sometimes just it you know gets pent up inside and eventually could explode. One of the time-hallowed, most appropriate means of dealing with pressure is recreation. Recreation is a beautiful thing. In fact, the root of the word in English, which probably, I don't know what that means, in Lashon Kodesh there are roots in English, I don't know, but is probably recreate, recreation, that a person is a creation, and sometimes that creation gets spent, becomes overwhelmed, it's too hard worked, it's exploding, it can't take it anymore. And by stopping and by playing and by relaxing and by, whether it's sports or other enjoyable diversions, what we're really doing is recreating ourselves and making ourselves ready to go the next time, ready for more. And this is something that we also have to keep in mind for our children, It also works on another level. A school or a home or a lifestyle that does not allow for normal recreation, for normal fun, and we're talking even on the even in the into the teenage years, not only for the little kids, the association with that experience is not positive. It's not enjoyable. I don't have any memories of just a good time, of taking it easy, of some healthy competition, of something that's exciting, and especially for those students that don't get excited about the learning, and even for those that do, because sometimes there are students who can handle it without any recreation. But since we don't always know who they are, and we might tend to overestimate them and think that they have this capability when they don't, it's probably always better to err on the side of caution and have a little more recreation and rely on what Chazal tell us, bitulo zuhi kiyumo, that sometimes the bitul, the negating of the learning, is really the thing that sustains the learning the most, because it recreates the individual and readies him or her to continue their work. So this is also something I think that's very important in paying attention to as parents. Another point, which I think is most significant, and if in this parenting talk series we can accomplish anything, this would be a major, major accomplishment. And that is, inimitable words of the Bali Musa, bridging the gap of the longest distance in the world, the gap between the mind, that which we know intellectually, and the heart, that which we feel, and the heart that motivates us and commands us to do the things that we do. We probably intuitively, from experience, from just general chokhmah, without even much studying, have a good intuitive sense of what parenting should be. Certainly if we read and we study and we listen and we participate in different parenting experiences and workshops and programs, we get a better idea intellectually of what has to be done. The problem is that when it comes, lamaisa, when push comes to shove, everything that we know here doesn't seem to rush quickly enough into the heart to connect with the proper action. And all of a sudden, we become oblivious to the knowledge that we knew and we could have told anybody else about it. But when it comes to our dealings with our own children, sometimes that doesn't happen. That gap that's never bridged, and we respond in ways that we know are totally inappropriate. I may have mentioned this, but my youngest son always has a way of chastising me, and as he was growing up, and he said, if he didn't like the way I was dealing with a certain problem, so he said, wait a minute, what if somebody else would call you and ask you what to do about this problem? You'd know what to tell them. Well, why can't you act that way with your own? That's a good kasha. It's very, very difficult. The emotions, the feeling, the love, the stakes, the caring, the worry, the embarrassment, the overwhelming involvement that we have with our own children makes it difficult to implement the intellectual realizations that we have in an actual, in an emotional, in a practical, lemaisa way. And therefore, I think it's important to review and review again and review again some of the basic principles. And it wouldn't be a bad idea. I don't know if this is up on the website, but I will be neder try to see to it that it or something like it should be put up. But it's a good idea to have some checklist of some of the basics. I wouldn't hang it on the refrigerator because maybe we don't want to admit to our children how hard we're working on it. On the other hand, maybe we do want to admit to our children how hard we're working on it, and they'd appreciate the fact that we're trying to be better parents. So that, I leave that to you. But just a number of basics that that we should review again and again and again and again and again, which never can never hurt to constantly refocus. Number one, showing love, respect, and friendship. So simple, everybody knows that. But we don't realize to what extent our children are needy for that and to what extent they are not sure how much we love them. They don't know as well as we or our parents or our grandparents may have known how much their children love them. They certainly don't feel that we always respect them. In fact, they have kindness to us that we're not respecting their space and respecting their attitudes and their feelings and their needs and their friends and the whole business. And so love, respect, and friendship are critical. And we should review it every day. We should constantly be looking for opportunities. A parent called me today and so beautifully said how with his older children, he got away with spending that extra measure of time. And Baruch Hashem, they developed fine. He now has a younger child that is more needy and is not doing so well with the minimal amount of parent involvement that he had. And he came to the realization that it's either putting the extra hour a day in now or paying for it in a serious and severe mode a couple of years down the line. And he started to do it, and he says immediately his child responded, and the problems that he called about a week ago, which unfortunately I never got back to him, don't exist anymore because he made that extra investment of time and showing loving, caring, respect, and so forth. Another important skill as a parent that we should review every day before we encounter our children, listen, listen, listen. Listening is much more important than speaking. When we listen to someone, we show them, we respect them, we show them how we're machshav them, how important they are, that it makes a difference to us what they say, and it validates them. It makes them feel good about themselves, that they are worthy of our attention to listen to them, and that is validating, that makes them happy. That's a critical, critical skill. We tend not to be able to listen. We're torn in so many different directions. We're listening to so many things at the same time. Sometimes two children are pulling at different sides of our hands, different sides of our clothing, and begging for attention. And it's not easy, but it's critical. The ability to listen, the time to listen, the focus to listen. A child does not believe that we're listening if we're also looking at something else. In fact, I find that even if you're talking to them on the phone and they don't have the ability to see what you're doing, they could tell whether you're listening with all of your concentration or whether you're also trying to do something else at the same time. And that's a critical issue. We must recognize the individuality of every child. And if we don't start looking at our children, each one different, take the time out to look at each one, not to think about parenting, not to think about goals for our family, not to think about how we want to raise our children, but also to think about Yaakov and Shimon and Avram and Zorah and Rivka, each one in their unique needs, in their unique personality, in their unique individuality, and to deal with them in ways that are uniquely directed to that individuality. This is something that must be reviewed again and again and again. If every day before we encounter our children, we tell ourselves, I must show love, respect, and friendship, and listen, 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 and focus on the individuality of each child, we'll have accomplished wonders in dealing with our children. We must provide numerous and varied opportunities for our children to succeed, especially when a child is not succeeding in the basics of school and you know, maybe some of the other normal social involvements. We have to find something that will bring success. And it's more important, or it's very important, to have something even in the spiritual realm, because the kids know that if they're not successful in the Jewish realm, they're missing something, even if they are successful in a secular realm or in a sports or any other talent. But find and provide opportunities to succeed, discover their unique talents, discover their strengths, research their strengths, consult with teachers and principals and friends about their unique strengths, and find opportunities for them to become heroes in the expression and the fulfillment of these strengths. And of course, this will foster a much more positive self-image when they feel good about themselves, and we show respect to them, and things are much different that way. Of course, part of this is also encouraging questions and answers. Questions are very important. Questions are, first of all, a window to a kid's thinking, and we get an opportunity to really see what's going on in their minds. But questions are also a sense of feeling good about themselves and validation, and that's important, because if they feel free to ask and they feel respected when they ask, then the things that are on their mind will come out, and they'll feel much better about themselves because we're willing to engage their questions. Discipline. Discipline is very important. Our children need structure. They crave structure. They want guidance. They want discipline. However, they want it in a very unique way. It has to be benevolent. It's with kindness, with chesed, with love, with caring. It's clearly perceived that it's for their benefit and not for our benefit, and it comes with a constant explanation of the rules and restrictions. We are explaining why, because even if they don't fully understand it, but that sets a that sets this sense that there is reason, there is, it makes sense, and they're much easier to deal with. As parents, and this is something that we have to review again and again, there's a tendency to deny the existence of problems. We'd love to believe that our children don't have problems. It would save us embarrassment. It would save us pain and suffering in our own lives. It would save our children pain and suffering because they have no problems. It would save us expenses because problems require solutions that are oftentimes today expensive. And it would save us time of getting involved and of dealing with all these problems. Therefore, the natural leaning of a parent is to try to deny the existence of a problem. As a society, we've done that oftentimes, denying the existence of problems. And even our institutions, our schools also sometimes tend to deny. And denial does not come from evil intention. In fact, the most caring, concerned parent or professional could be in denial just because the admission is too painful. And therefore we're blinded. But we can't afford denial. We can't allow for our children to feel that sense of denial. Because if we deny their problems, then we don't look to resolve them. We don't take advantage of opportunities that exist to resolve them, because we're not even admitting that they exist. And the kids who sense that something is wrong, even if they can't articulate it, they live in a world where the problems are denied, and they start to feel insecure, unsure of themselves. Maybe something is really wrong with me. I don't even know what's going on in my life. I think I have a problem. Everybody else says I'm crazy. Maybe I am crazy. And I can have all kinds of negative effects. Baruch Hashem, we live in a sophisticated world. We have many venues for the resolution of problems with our children, professionals, mental health professionals, mechanchim with a lot of experience and depth of insight, mentors that are available, books, literature, lectures, information that's available to help us. Let's not deny the problem. Let's rather identify the problem and face up with the problem. However, at the same time, even when there is admission to the problem, and of course, as we've mentioned many times, there has to be unconditional acceptance of the individual with the problem. The problem in no way makes me love you less, in no way makes me respect you less, in no way makes me care for you less and want you less and less committed to you. Have a problem? We have a problem. It's our problem. Like in the inimitable words of Rabbi Aryeh Levine, when he went, he took his wife once to Dr. Cook in Yerushalayim, and he said to Dr. Cook, "My wife's foot hurts us today. It's shared pain. The problems, your problems, are our problems. However, we must make it very clear to them that we believe in their ability to rise above the problems. Our children will believe in themselves to the extent that they sense from us how we believe in them. And the moment that we do something to hint to them, even in the slightest, that I've lost faith in them, I don't believe they're ever going to make it, I think they're finished, they're finished." And even, and this is a very difficult thing, that even if a person is so accepting and loving and caring for a child, despite all of their inappropriateness, we have to be careful that that doesn't send the wrong message and say, "Oh, I'm tolerant of all of your misdeeds, and because I don't expect any bad out of you anyway, because I've given up on you." That would be a crime. We have to find the balance between, I love you for who you are, not what you do or don't do, but on the other hand, I still believe in you. That believing in a child can elevate them, can give them a true sense of optimism about their future, and can sometimes make all the difference between a future of accomplishment and a future just of just missing it.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.